The logical mind versus the emotional heart. This is one of the laws that brings it all together. You know, as Zig Ziglar said, people don't buy for logical reasons, they buy for emotional reasons. As we monitor top persuaders, we notice one thing. There's a balance between logic and emotion, and first of all, you need to have both, and second of all, you need to adjust the level of each depending on their personality type. Dale Carnegie once said, when dealing with people, remember, you're not dealing with creatures of logic, but with creatures of emotion, creatures bristling with prejudice and motivated by pride and vanity. In persuasion, your message has to focus on emotions, all the while maintaining a balance between logic and feelings. Logic and emotion are the two elements that make for perfect persuasion. We can be persuaded using only logic or only emotion, but the effect will be short-term and unbalanced. Understand, though, emotions are critical. They create movement and action. They give us energy during the presentation. They get us to act on a proposal being presented to us. The challenge with relying exclusively on emotion to persuade your prospect is that after she has left the persuasive situation, her emotions fade, leaving her with nothing concrete to fall back on. Logic plays the role of creating a foundation for emotion. The balance between logic and emotion could be called the twin engines of persuasion. Great persuaders know that each audience and each individual has a different balance between logic and emotion. Your analytical type personalities need more logic than emotion. Your amiable personalities require more emotion and less logic. Always remember, you have to have both elements present in your message, regardless of the personality types listening. In most persuasive situations, people react based on emotions, then justify their actions with logic and fact. That's when the emotions have left, they rely on logic. A message that is completely emotionally based will often set off alarm bells on the logical side. On the other hand, a logical message with no appeal to emotion doesn't create a strong enough response in the audience. A great persuader will create a proper balance between logic and emotion in order to create the perfect persuasive message. Have you ever listened to a teleconference, been to a workshop, gone to a seminar, and it was exciting, it changed your life, you loved it, and you went home and tried to explain it to somebody what exactly happened, and it just wasn't there? It's because you were trying to explain emotional experience with logic, and that's what many persuaders do. We are persuaded by reason, but we are moved by emotion. Several studies conclude up to 90% of the decisions we make are based on emotion. Although we always use logic to justify our actions to ourselves and others. Take note that emotion will always win over logic, and that imagination will always win over reality. Think about talking to children in regards to the fear of the dark, or to someone about their phobia of snakes, or the fear of flying. You know it's useless to use logic to persuade them, and that their thoughts and actions don't make sense. They are convinced that there still is a problem. Convincing your children there's no monster under the bed. You turn on the light, she don't look, there's no monster under the bed, they're not in the closet. They say, well, duh, the lights are on, it scares them away. And you could use all the logic in the world. It doesn't work. You have to use a balance of logic and emotions. So you want to look at an emotional pattern. This emotional pattern can always be seen in the way we buy and even in the way we are convinced of something. Let's talk about this. Our heads see the numbers and tell us to stick with the car that's more modestly priced. Well, our heart seeing the gleaming sports car telling us to go home with the Jaguar, or the Mercedes, or the higher-end car. Our heads tell us it's ridiculous to buy another pair of shoes since we already have 14 pairs, but you may even realize that no one is going to notice or care about the new shoes as much as we will. But our hearts went out, thinking of all the stunning new outfits these shoes will go with, and we go home with a new shoebox tucked under our arms. Our heads tell us not to believe anything we hear, that politicians are a bunch of liars, but our hearts are won over by their impassioned speeches. Okay, so let's talk about logic. You need to have a balance. Let's talk about logic. What stirs an audience? Now let's do a little reality check. Are we rational human beings? Do we follow all forms of logic? Do we only act if it feels right? Sometimes do we actually avoid the facts to follow our own emotions? Of course. Have you ever tried to persuade an emotional person with logic? It'll backfire almost every time. We generally think we make decisions based on the facts. At least that's what we tell everyone, but this is rarely the case. It has been found that when a person agrees with a particular message, they tend to perceive it as being more logical or rational. When a person disagrees with the message, on the other hand, they perceive it as an emotional plea. The truth is that our decision-making process relies on a mixture between emotion and its partner logic. However, we cannot rely entirely on emotion until our logical side has been engaged. An interesting study was done with students. They had the students prepare a speech that were written in either a logical or an emotional standpoint. Now, these are very controversial topics. They divided the class in half. They were only allowed to use logic, and the other half only allowed to use emotions. Now, the speeches were presented, filmed, and then evaluated by other college students. Here's the interesting point. There was no real consistency in the findings except that speeches bearing a message that the evaluator agreed with were rated as more rational, even though they were intended to be emotional. While those the evaluator did not agree with were considered to be more emotional, even though most of those were intended to be logical. It seemed to be the case that whether the speech was logical or emotional depended on the listener. Researchers also concluded that, as a general rule, people seem unable to consistently distinguish between logic and emotional appeals. The logical side of an argument appeals to our reason. Reasoning is the process of drawing a conclusion based on evidence. For an argument to be legitimate, it has to be true and valid, and logical reasoning must be used to back it up. Many persuaders and advertisers and marketers use faulty forms of logic, leaving gaping holes that require the audience to make assumptions and fill in the blanks. These are called logical fallacies. Now, a fallacy is very generally an error in reasoning. This differs from a factual error, which is simply being wrong about the facts. In other words, a fallacy is an argument in which premises don't completely support the conclusion. So let's talk about some common fallacies that you'll hear and that you'll see and that could be destroying your message. The faulty cause assumes that because one thing follows another, the second thing was definitely caused by the first. Here's an example. Sean broke his mother's mirror, and sure enough, he was in a car wreck the next week. Or one you see quite a bit is a sweeping generalization. That assumes that what is true in most cases must be true in all cases. For example, we can't hire this candidate because he's an ex-felon, and studies show that most ex-felons experience relapses. Or how about the hasty generalization? Now, this assumes that a small piece of information is soundly representative of the whole situation. An example, I don't like Thai food very much. The food I tried at this one Thai restaurant just was terrible and I was sick for days. Or what about the faulty analogy? That's when you assume that if two things are alike in some ways, they must be alike in all ways. Here's an example. Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera dress the same and sing the same type of music, so they must have very similar personalities. Or the famous faulty sign. That assumes that one event is a reliable predictor of another. This guy's wearing a big starter jacket, has a tattoo, wears baggy pants. Probably a gang member. Or tautology. Now what this is defining an argument in a manner that makes it impossible to disprove. Here's an example. You are a disagreeable person, and if you disagree with me, it will just prove even more how disagreeable you are. What about appeal to authority? Now, what this does is justifies an argument by citing a famous who also supports the argument. Those shoes are great for Michael Jordan, so they'll be great for me. And you've probably heard of the slippery slope. That assumes that a particular step invariably leads to similar steps, cultivating with a negative outcome. Here's an example. If I let one student hand in a paper late, then I'll have to let others hand theirs in late too. And before you know it, everyone will be begging for an extension. Oh, and you've heard about the red herring. Now, red herring attempts to divert attention away from the real issue. Here's an example. When accused by his wife of cheating at cards, Frank says, "Nothing I ever do pleases you. I spent a whole week cleaning out the garage, and all you did was complain about how I'd reorganized it." What about appeal to ignorance? Now, that uses a person's inability to disprove a claim as proof that the claim is right. Here's an example. We know that people living on other planets and other galaxies because no one can prove that they're not. As you become more aware of these fallacies, you'll see them pop up in every aspect of your life. So let's look at evidence and logic. Reasoning is a powerful tool for the mind, but strong, concrete evidence should be the cornerstone of a logical speech. Evidence not only makes an argument ring true in persuasive situations, but it also substantially enhances your credibility. There are four major types of evidence: testimony, statistics, analogies, and examples. You will strengthen your position when you use the elements of all four forms, rather than depending on only one. When you provide proof in this manner, you remove doubts that may linger in your audience's mind. First is testimony. You have to realize people are going to believe other people much faster than they believe you, because you have something to gain in a persuasive situation. Your audience wants to know what the experts say about you or your topic. Experts, your peers, other people will all work as testimonials. See, a testimony is the judgment or opinions of others considered experts or peers in a particular field or area of interest. Now, a testimony can be a quote, a picture, an interview, an endorsement from any credible person. It could be implied with someone just attending your event or being next to you, or having a picture on the box or a signature on your product. Seek out testimonies. You'd be surprised How many people are willing to give you a testimonial? They're willing to say they love doing business with you. That they're willing to say that what you have to offer changed their life. What about statistics? Statistics are numerical proofs of your claims. For example, this demographic uses, or 4 out of 5 dentists recommend, using graphs and charts to make statistics more memorable and leave a greater impression on the listener. Now, I know some people are very suspicious of statistical proof. Make sure your statistics are credible and sound. Know where you got them and who did the research. People know you can arrange statistics to say just about anything. Use statistics sparingly and only in conjunction with other forms of evidence. Besides, the role of statistics can be very boring. But the right statistic, by the right source and the right place in your presentation, will make the logical mind ring true. And even analogies. Analogies have a great impact in the mind of the receiver. Analogies allow you to present a new and foreign idea and compare it with something similar that your prospects can relate to in their own lives. Analogies can also give us new perspective on an old concept. We have all heard the analogy, fish and visitors start to smell in 3 days. What an easy way to get your point across. In 8 simple words, you can paint a picture you could have never explained in 100 words. Now, examples could include a metaphor, a simile. I can say not having a personal development program is like a bucket with a hole in it. That not learning persuasion is like having a beautiful vehicle in your driveway but no gas to drive it. Or on the keys of the piano persuasion, you're only playing chopsticks, you should be playing Mozart. As we monitor people and listen to them, examples and metaphors and analogies are part of everyday life in every conversation. In almost every sentence, there's some type of example or metaphor or simile. It just rings true. Why would you spend 30 minutes to try to explain something when you can say it in a sentence? Things like, time is a thief, bread of life, you are a pig, burning love, old flame, chill out, warm reception, cold as ice, frozen with fear, feeling blue, you light up my life, she's sweet, bittersweet memories. And on a sour note, you have great taste. Love stinks. The sweet smell of success. The words were music to my ears. Eye of the tiger, half-baked idea. I smell a rat. King of the jungle. Wolf in sheep's clothing. It's a powerful technique, very important to use in any type of persuasive presentation. Now, I mentioned examples. Examples can really make your evidence come alive. We love to relate to examples that bridge the gap between logic and our personal lives. Your prospects understand examples at a deeper level because they are based on common experiences and interpretations of meaning. Examples can be real or hypothetical and can include quotations, personal accounts, physical evidence, empirical studies, or even published reports. What examples can you use? One example that I've used before is when I talk about goal setting. Most people cringe and moan because they don't know how to do it the right way. For example, if I want to learn how to snow ski and I went to the top of the highest mountain, I go, I can figure this out. I don't need a lesson. I put on my skis. I ski down, hit a tree, break my leg, and say, well, this is a terrible sport. I'm never going to do it again. With the truth being, it's because no one's ever taught you to do it the right way, which is true in skiing or in goal setting. You also must get compelling evidence. As you prepare your message, understand that humans aren't capable of absorbing all the information you can gather. We are hit with data all day long, and most of the time we don't want to absorb it. We can't absorb it. In fact, we are very selective in what we allow ourselves to retain. When we hit information overload, we turn our minds off and retain nothing. An amazing U.S. study on comprehension of television messages produced very revealing results. After watching commercials and other forms of messages, 97% of viewers misunderstood some part of every message they saw. Let me repeat that. They're watching commercials, a form of persuasion. 97% of the viewers misunderstood some part of every single message they saw. On average, viewers misunderstood about 30% of the content they viewed overall. Information is just poured out too fast. The evidence you choose must be selective, precise, and powerful. You can't afford to bombard your audience with too much information. When creating the logical side of your message, you have to understand the concept of the number 7. This is also known as channel capacity. This is the amount of room our brain's capable of storing various kinds of information. In fact, George Miller wrote, there seems to be some limitation built into us either by learning or by the design of our nervous systems, a limit that keeps our channel capacities in this general range. There is only so much room in your prospect's brain to absorb logical numbers and information. This is why phone numbers only have 7 digits. So spend the time necessary to fully research the types of evidence you want to use to strengthen your arguments. You already know that using the right evidence from the right sources greatly increases the credibility of your message. However, the opposite is also true. Poor or irrelevant evidence undermines the credibility of your message. When compiling evidence, consider the following. Use of evidence supported by an independent expert rather than facts presented alone. Statistical evidence will be more persuasive when paired with individual case studies. It's important that you also document the sources of all testimonials. Understand that new information is also often more convincing than old information. Evidence consistent with your audience's belief will be more persuasive because they'll evaluate everything from their own perspectives and attitudes. Build credibility by also acknowledging and even including the other side of the argument. A two-way discussion will bear far more weight than a one-sided lecture. Evidence works best when it's suited to the audience and their experience. Now consider these points. Referring to an evidence as fact increases its weight. Evidence that is verifiable will always be more persuasive. Evidence that is specific will also always be more persuasive. And as you know, an unbiased testimony is more persuasive than a biased one. Personal experience is more persuasive than not having any experience at all. And presenters who have not yet established their credibility will benefit more from the use of evidence than those with established credibility. Evidence is especially important when the audience is unfamiliar with the topic. Factual evidence is particularly persuasive when the audience consists of highly intelligent people. Evidence is more persuasive when you provide not only the source, but also their qualifications. Evidence is also more persuasive when you confirm an audience's belief, so it rings true. Logic. That's the first half of balance. Now let's talk about emotion, winning people's hearts. While logic is the language of the conscious mind, emotion is the language of the unconscious mind. We know that emotions are reactions to perceived and imagined stimuli, not based on logic, but on one's personal experiences. Emotions often outweigh our logic. Imagine placing a plank of wood on the ground and walking its length a few times. Easy enough, right? Sure, anybody can do it. But suppose you placed it 100 feet in the air between two buildings. You know you can walk the plank. You just did it over and over again. Yet now emotions and fears outweigh logic. Your what-ifs and your imagination supersede the concrete knowledge of your ability to walk the plank. In his book, Emotional Intelligence, Daniel Goleman asserts that understanding emotions is more pertinent to leading a successful life than having a high intelligence. Often people of high IQ struggle at work because of their weaknesses in fundamental human relation skills. Goleman calls the skill emotional intelligence. He emphasizes that emotional intelligence largely determines our success in relationships, work, and even physical well-being. Emotional intelligence is a type of social intelligence that involves the ability to monitor one's own and others' emotions, to understand them, and to use them. They can use that information when they understand the emotions to guide one's thinkings and their actions and be able to understand their prospect. When they're feeling angry or fear or indifferent or frustrated, what do you do? What do you say? Understanding, first of all, what the emotion is, why it exists, and how to handle it. Emotional intelligence includes emotional management, personal motivation, empathy, self-awareness, and social skills. When you are persuading someone, emotions provide the springboard for a successful execution of your argument. In fact, I would even say emotions are the energy, the very fuel of the persuasive process. Without tapping into your audience's emotions, there is no strength or energy in your message. Emotion is a power you can harness to use in practically every aspect of persuasion. Remember, logic is important, but emotion helps you catapult an otherwise dull or flat exchange to the next level. Consider the following advantages of emotion over logic. When you arouse the emotions of your audience, it engages them and distracts them from your intention to persuade. Emotion requires less effort than logic. Logic solicits cognitive effort while emotion is automatic. Presentations aimed at engaging the audience's emotions are usually more interesting than logical ones. And emotion-based arguments are often easier to recall than logic-based arguments. Emotion almost always leads more quickly to change than logic does. You must know when to create positive or negative emotions and when to dispel negative emotions. You have to find ways to tap into your prospect's emotions, such as hope, love, pride, gratitude, and even excitement. And when you're able to do this, you can inspire anyone. You can move anyone. You can persuade anyone. Decide ahead of time what emotional climate you want to create. Capture those emotions within yourself. You'll be surprised how you can transfer those emotions to your audience. See, most people tend to avoid their emotions. They hide their emotions. They bury their emotions. Your emotions are like gauges on your car. They're telling you what's going on the inside, what to do and how to handle that. And once you understand your emotions, you'll be able to understand your prospect's emotions. Anger is a fun emotion. It's usually a secondary emotion, meaning what's really making you angry and what's making you angry now are usually two different things. See, your emotions prepare your body for responses. When you feel anger, blood rushes out of your brain, which is why you're not thinking very clearly, and to your hands to get ready to fight. And when you sense fear, blood rushes to your legs to get ready to run. You have to understand emotions, and you even have to understand moods. Mood matters. If you think you can have a fight with somebody and put on a fake smile to go talk to your prospect, they're not going to sense it, you're wrong. Now, they don't sense that you just had a fight. They just sense something is wrong. And they lie and say, just looking, can't afford it, it's too expensive, and they leave. So first of all, your mood matters, and great persuaders can get into a good mood very fast. And second of all, if your prospect's in a rotten mood, you need to get them into a good mood before you start persuading them. Because when people are in a negative mood, they recall negative emotions, negative thoughts. When people are in a good mood, they recall good emotions and recall great thoughts. Understand emotions. Understand mood. You see, over the centuries, philosophers have tried to categorize the very many complex emotions of humanity. Not an easy task. Aristotle came up with 14. Anger, friendship, fear, shame, patience, enmity, confidence, shamelessness, emulation, contempt, kindness, pity, indignation, and even envy. And even other philosophers argued emotions are largely influenced by one's time, period, and culture. The reality is, when you cut emotions down the middle, it's either fear or love. Think about it. Fear, anger, anxiety, sadness, depression, hurt, lonely, shame, and guilt. All a subset of fear. And then love, happiness, joy, trust, caring, compassion, satisfaction, all a subset of love. So let's talk about some emotions you really need to understand as a persuader. Now, we could spend all day on this, but let me just talk about a couple. Worry. When your prospect is worried or preoccupied about something occurring now or about to happen in the future, your ability to persuade declines. Worry is feeling anxious, uneasy, or concerned that something will or has happened. I have heard worry referred to as negative goal setting. Anxiety creates tension, a fear that occupies our thoughts, which if encouraged, will grow and continue to dominate our thoughts. When you can combat worry in your prospects by modifying their anxiety into thoughts of reality, bring them back to reality by having them realize we can't change the past. Stress that most of the things we worry about in the first place will never happen. Your goal is to help your prospects substitute their negative mental images with positive ones. And worry decreases with decision. Worry increases with indecision. So help them make a decision as soon as possible. And then there's fear. And at times you need to use and understand fear as a persuader. You see, fear is anxiety or tension caused by danger, apprehension, harm, pain, or destruction. The possibility of harm can be real or imagined. Fear motivates and moves us away from unpleasant circumstances or potential destruction. Fear persuades us to do many things we might not otherwise do. Life insurance, airbags, home alarms, guns, most of those purchases come out of fear. Dentist, that's usually out of fear. Fear does not work in every circumstance, however. If we were solely motivated by fear, we would never speed or start smoking. The proper dose of fear is essential to persuasion. If the dose is too small, it will not stimulate action. If the fear is too large, it will trigger resistance and acceptance will decrease. So for fear to stick and create action and persuasion, you have to understand the steps and how this works. First of all, when you use fear, the image of fear must be unpleasant. For example, pain, cancer, threat, destruction, grief, losing your teeth, being sick needs to be unpleasant. And it must be imminent. Your prospects must feel that not only the fearful event is likely to happen, but also that they could be victimized by its occurrence. They must feel vulnerable. If I want to talk about the danger of asteroids, and asteroids are going to hit the Earth, you probably wouldn't sense a lot of fear because in your mind it's not imminent. And then, once the fear is triggered, you, as a persuader, need to provide a solution. Give your prospects a recommended action to suspend or eliminate their fear. Now, the key is, your prospects must believe they are capable of doing what is asked of them, and that doing so will work for them. You can scare them, it might feel imminent, but if they don't feel capable of doing what you're asking them to do, the fear will not trigger motivation. And I mentioned anger as a secondary emotion. It is usually an indicator that something else is askew and that your prospect needs and wants attention. Now, you can assist in subsiding a person's anger by determining the key issue he is upset about. It is often effective to ask for his help, opinions, or advice. Change the scenery. Anything you can do to get the blood back in their brain. This will usually diffuse his anger or even change his attitude and demeanor completely. In some circumstances, a persuader may want to use anger to make a certain point or even invoke a certain reaction. And then there's sympathy and compassion. you can generate action for your cause by creating sympathy for it. When we see others victimized by misfortune that was beyond our control, we feel more sympathetic toward them and more motivated to help them. You've probably seen this technique used by marketers when they show you pictures of starving children, battered women, abandoned animals, and disabled adults. So learn to tip the scale. Learn to understand balance. A master persuader will use the dual engine of balance. They have a balance between emotion and logic. What emotions do you need to trigger? When do you need to learn to handle these? Can you read their facial expressions? Do you know when they're angry? That is a sign of a great persuader. It's not a time to speed up your presentation or talk faster. Someone's in a bad mood or having a negative emotion. Your job as a persuader is to change that, get them in the right mindset to persuade, and then, and only then, can you persuade. You see, this dual engine will allow you to fly straight and true in any persuasive situation. Become a student of both logic and emotion and develop the ability to articulate logic that rings true to your audience. Here's an important point about logic. Even if it's true, you might not want to use it because maybe it's not believable. I've seen plenty of statistics and examples that were true, testimonials that were true, but they were so incredible, the audience did not believe them. Very important that you understand that. Learn how to use your human emotion radar. This will help you determine important aspects of your audience, such as what are they feeling? What emotions are they trying to hide? What emotions are they showing? How can you use each of these emotions in a persuasive process? Great persuaders know what emotions to use, when to use it, how to trigger specific emotions, and how to balance the audience's emotion with logic. It's time to engineer your persuasive message with balance. Logic and emotion, together the twin engine of your success in the world of persuasion.